This is Shots Gotta Fall, the Penn State basketball podcast. Introducing your hosts. They were once nitwits, and they have now graduated to professional dimwits. Here are Steve, Travis, and Evan Smith.
Welcome to yet another episode of Shots Gotta Fall, the premier, the best, the only Penn State basketball podcast. My name is Evan Smith, riding solo here today. Unfortunately, Steve couldn't be with us. It seems like Steve got to take care of the win against Michigan. Unfortunately, I guess I got to take care of the loss versus Indiana. And listen, we're going to have a full season recap and kind of retrospective as we move into the offseason here, you know, in the next couple days, and we'll kind of get to our offseason podcast schedule. But listen, you guys have been listening with us for the whole season. It felt right to give you the immediate reaction. You know, unfortunately, it was a loss last night. Penn State did fall to the Indiana Hoosiers in the second round of the Big Ten tournament, 61-59. A pretty ugly game in many ways, perhaps a fitting end to the Penn State basketball season, likely end, and we'll talk about that a little bit as well. But want to give you the immediate feedback for those that stayed up with us last night. We appreciate it. It's a quick turnaround here. But, you know, again, we're here for you. We're all in this together. That's the world of being a Penn State basketball fan. So let's get into it. It was kind of a really an ugly game the whole way. The highest scoring half for either team is only 32 points. Hopefully you bet the under. We started off, Penn State was in the game. They were always kind of down 6, 7, 8 points most of the first half. But to their credit, they never let Indiana run away with it. They were able to make a couple runs, keep it close. The halftime score was 32-27 Indiana. And for those that were watching, that score felt about right. That was an appropriate score. We had gotten it close. I think we actually got within one or maybe even tied it up once, but we never were able to take the lead in the first half. Struggling shooting the whole way. I don't think that was necessarily a surprise coming off a second game of a back-to-back. And we know Indiana's not a great shooting team. On the day combined, the teams finished 10 for 39 from three-point range, right? Just not a really good three-point shooting day at all. Credit to Mike Rhodes and the staff coming out of the halftime tunnel. Penn State took their first lead. They came out, they played hard. It was fun to watch. You could definitely figure out a way that this is a winnable game for Penn State. And I think both Steve and I alluded that into our picks. There's a reason that despite Indiana being number 6 in the seeding in the Big Ten Conference, they're not in any NCAA tournament prognostications right now, not even after this win. In fact, as my co-host pointed out this morning in the chat, Indiana's metrics are worse than ours, both KenPom and Net. There's a reason that KenPom predicted us to win. The spread for this game moved wildly, by the way. It opened up as a Penn State favorite, and then a lot of late money came back in on Indiana, so hopefully you got in at the right time. But let's kind of go through some of the final plays of the game, because it was really interesting. The second half became a bit of a foul fest, which kind of hurts. It definitely hurts Penn State in the way they like to play aggressive defense, right? We've talked about this. We want a loose whistle, as I think I've said a couple times. The second half wasn't really it. You're talking double-digit fouls on both teams. There were some very tough calls against Penn State. There were some tough calls that went in our favor as well. Unfortunately, I think the biggest issue with the fouls is that it just hurt us down low. Once Wahab picked up his fifth foul, we didn't really have an answer for Khalil Ware. We barely had an answer for him, you know, with Wahab in the game. Wahab, you know, played his heart off, did not have his best game just going over his line. It was a kind of a tough way for him in his Nittany Lion career. Didn't hit a single field goal from the field. He was 4 for 5 from the free throw line, had 9 rebounds, did foul out, like I mentioned, 3 blocks, a steal, and an assist. They tried to get him his looks. I think 3 of the first 4 possessions, they got him, you know, 2, 3 foot shots. They just missed. Again, Indiana's center Ware was just a tough matchup the whole night. But let's kind of break down the end of this game, because it was an interesting finish. And Penn State, man, they don't go away, and you got to give credit to Mike Rhodes. And again, I've said this a couple times throughout the year, really enable the moniker of gritty, not pretty. I know that wasn't this team's mantra, but that's really how this team played. So if you kind of look at where things, you know, ended up late in the game, you know, I want to kind of fast forward to 57 all with 2 minutes left. Now, tie game, right? We're in this. Puff Johnson missed the three. All right, that's okay. That happens. And Indiana knew with the height differential they had, they just threw it down low to Khalil Ware, got an easy dunk to go up to. So Penn State calls timeout. Baldwin makes a little floater jumper, another guy who had a really tough game from the field. We'll kind of redo the stats in a second. And Indiana comes down and kind of forces a rush three by Xavier Johnson. Never really looked comfortable. You're thinking, all right, here it is. We've hung around all day with our tired legs. It's 59 all with a minute left. It's our ball. Let's go win this thing. And unfortunately, Ace missed a three. Indiana did get the rebound. Indiana missed the layup on the other end. And this was one that was the call that went in our favor that definitely shouldn't have, because it was a missed layup that they kind of called a jump ball. This was not a jump ball. East Baldwin completely got him on the arm. We got the call. Okay, 45 seconds left. Tie game. Let's go win it. Baldwin missed jumper. Indiana got the rebound. You kind of knew they were going to look down low. We actually played pretty good defense, forced a Malik Renew kind of a weird off balance forced running jumper, but unfortunately didn't put a body on Anthony Leal, who had the easiest tap in layup. Penn State rushed down the floor, did actually get a pretty good look from Puff Johnson, although as Dick Girardi said on the radio broadcast for Penn State, you could tell it was short off his hands the whole way. Kind of the story of the night. But if you're the Nittany Lions, you know, coming into this game, playing the second game on a back-to-back, to have at least a decent three-point shooter, the ball in their hands to win the game. And Coach Rhodes even said there was really no interest in going into overtime there, not with the foul trouble. Nick Kern had fouled out with like 6 or 7 minutes left in the second half. We were obviously out without Wahab. The right play there was to go for a win. Maybe could have gotten a little bit closer, but you got a decent shooter. You got to look for the win. You'll take that if you're the Nittany Lions. You know, fortunately, it bounced out. But Puff Johnson had a great day. Now, not great from deep, but he finished with 16 points, 7 for 7 from the line, and 8 rebounds. Puff Johnson, and even though Wahab didn't have his best game, Johnson and Wahab's late-season resurgence has really been key in the Nittany Lions getting some wins late in the season. Really going to have to hope that Puff Johnson and East Baldwin return, but that'll be more of a retrospective pod. We'll get there in a few days. Let's focus on the game. The biggest issue that Penn State had, and we knew this going into the game, was trying to stop Indiana in the paint. They did the best they could, but they really weren't successful. If you really look at it, the Indiana starting backcourt, if you combine their center and two forwards, had 41 points. All right, Penn State only had 59 as a team. Other things for Penn State, Zach Hicks was definitely cooler than he was from the night before. He did finish 3 for 7. It was weird. He kind of banked in a three, had 2 and 1 threes, so this kind of helped out. Not his best game, but you know, he still finished 11 points. Nick Kern had a pretty frustrating game. 5 fouls in just 22 minutes. Again, you can argue whether or not they were the right calls. Some, you know, we had some moving screen calls. The problem is when you have 4 fouls and your 5th foul is pretty obvious, they're going to call it, right? And there's really no doubt about that. He finished with just 8 points and 2 rebounds. Not really good enough. They did it 2 threes, thankfully. Unfortunately, this was just a cold night for Ace Baldwin. And listen, if he's going to be your leading scorer, we've talked about it all season, it's going to be tough to win. He just had just 9 points, did fill up the stat sheet with all the other things that you're used to. He had 5 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal. He had 3 blocks and just 1 foul in a game where everyone seemingly was in foul trouble. He only had 1 foul. Did go all 40 minutes, but listen, 3 for 15 from the field, 0 for 7 from 3 is just not good enough. I'll be honest, when I was looking at the stats after the game, when I saw Baldwin attempted 7 threes, I was actually surprised. I didn't even remember him getting 7 shots, but that was definitely the focus of Indiana. They said, you know, you guys try to beat us deep, and we really couldn't. From three, it was Zach Hicks's 3 for 7. Puff Johnson, a cold 1 for 6. Kern had the surprising 2 for 2. Baldwin, 0 for 7. O'Boyle, 0 for 2. Jameel Brown, 0 for 1. DeMarco Dunn was 1 for 2. 7 for 27, that's tough. Now, we shot great from the line, and officiating is going to be a big takeaway from this game. You're going to hear a lot of people talk about officiating, and that's fine. I think everyone that I spoke to post game was basically saying, yeah, it was probably a little bit overly officiated. Well, what we mean by that is just too many whistles, but it doesn't mean it was unfair or bad. I think it does perhaps hurt us more because of our thinness in the front court. Once Wahab went out at the end of the game, we were playing Puff Johnson at center. It was very similar to the Miles Dread center lineups of a year before, right, of Micah Shrewsbury. And while there's pros, and we saw it last year, you can score a lot. The cons are it's really hard to play defense, or in the case of Indiana's last possession, just giving up an offensive rebound because you're just too small. Indiana was led by Khalil Ware's 18 points and 14 rebounds. I actually don't think Penn State played horribly against him. They did the best they could. He's a pretty good player. They held Indiana to just 22 of 56 shooting from the field. That's less than 40%. Unfortunately, Penn State was under 30%. The announcers love talking about it. I believe they missed their first 12 layups. That was a common theme they kept talking about. But a lot of that has to do with the Indiana defense, right? These were not uncontested layups. Indiana played good D the entire way. It's a tough way to end the year because this was a winnable game. Indiana's probably like the worst 6 seed in any conference tournament, out there. And you look ahead and, yeah, Nebraska's good, but that was a winnable game. You're avoiding Purdue until the final. It was a pretty good bracket. And this is what my main takeaway is from the game, you know, as we move past a simple recap. This is why you need to get the bye in the first round. Right. Yes, this was an easier path. Obviously, Michigan's pretty bad. Indiana, I don't think any one of us is going to pick Indiana to beat Nebraska. And Nebraska was upsettable. But just trying to play back-to-back games, or what would have been if you're listening today, three games had we won last night, it's just hard, right? And listen, this Penn State team is a pretty poor shooting team, you know, from deep and things like that. We've struggled throughout the year, but this was an all-timer, right? 27.6 from the field, 25.9 from three. It's easy to blame it all on tired legs, but it's true. I also blame the fouls on tired legs, right? Instead of moving your feet, you're reaching, and that's what happens, right? You're going to get called in foul trouble. I was almost bemoaning. I said, guys, listen, they're calling things tight in the second half. We need to adjust. And we just didn't, right? We kept playing the same way, and it's not a bad thing. You know, it worked. We held Indiana 61 points. You'll take that. But you just need to do a little bit better. You need, like, Kern's fifth foul. When he had four, what was he doing? I don't know if I would have put him back in. You know, when he got his fourth foul, Wahab navigated the foul trouble as best he could. He still played almost 30 minutes, which is about what he would normally play anyway. So that didn't kill him. It just puts the team in a really bad spot. You know, there's a way to do it without getting called. Ace Baldwin, an example, played 40 minutes and only committed one foul. And I think that's the issue when I look at foul trouble. And we're going to talk, you know, refs are going to be part of the game. If you're on Twitter, you're going to see people complaining about it. We had 20 team fouls. So if you average 10 each half, that's a little bit higher than you want, but it's not an outrageous number. But the problem is the distribution. It's five on Wahab, it's four on Johnson, it's five on Kern. No one else had more than two, and that was only Zach Hicks. Everyone else was one or zero. So you kind of run into this issue where, okay, yeah, maybe they're not calling a ridiculous amount of fouls, but they're all on the same people, right? We got to play better team defense. And, you know, I love looking at, did we do our jobs, right? Who did their jobs? Well, the problem today was there was really not a whole lot from anyone on the bench. Lilly did play 8 minutes, which wasn't bad. Got four rebounds, had a nice dunk. But wasn't playing down the stretch when Wahab got fouled out. Leo Boyle was pretty invisible, missed two threes, one really ugly in 6 minutes, did have an assist. Jameel Brown came in, took his requisite three, missed it, that was that. Raquandus Mitchell, 4 minutes, no stats besides a foul. DeMarco Dunn provided a little bit off the bench. I'd say he did his job in 24 minutes, had 9 points, 4 for 4 from the line, and two rebounds. But as a whole, your bench providing 11 points, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough, especially when Nick Kern has 8 and Baldwin has 9 and Wahab only has 4. Where are the points going to come from? And that's how you finish with less than 60 points. I think it's going to be hard. This is a hard one to swallow because this was a winnable game. Penn State could have won this basketball game. I mean, besides just having a three-pointer go in at the end, we had opportunities, right? We went through those last 2 minutes. We had multiple possessions where the game was tied and the ball was in our hands. You got to score on one of those or at least get to the line, right? In a game where there's that many fouls, get to the line. Indiana's entire starting lineup had three fouls or more, right? Two players finished with four. The other three players finished with three. They also had a guard off the bench with the game winner who had three fouls. So they had their 20 fouls were distributed a little bit more evenly as opposed to ours, and I think that's what caused some of the issues. In some ways, it's a fitting end because this is a team that's played scrappy, that's played hard all year. What other way would they go out? Right. It wasn't pretty. And I think this is one of the things as we start learning, you know, what the road's future is going to look like. You know, obviously, the first two questions are who's going to come back, right? Do you get that fifth year out of Johnson and Baldwin? You know, a month and a half ago, I might have said, we're really going to miss Johnson, but he started to play really well. There's a reason he started last night, right? He was put in starting lineup over to DeMarco Dunn, and he played 31 minutes, the third highest on the team behind only Hicks and Baldwin. But we got to figure out a way to defend the free throw line a little bit better. And of course, I'm not talking about the KenPom stat about free throw percentage opponent shooting, just giving up too many free throws, right? And some of those are fouls that we just have to start to learn not to do. And like I said, Nick Kern's 5,022 minutes, just not acceptable, right? You just can't do that. Penn State will finish the year 16-17. Technically, their conference record will finish at 9-11, but you can say 10-12 since they went 1-1 in the, you know, in the Big Ten tournament. As far as any postseason goes, we've had a couple of questions about that on social media. It's pretty unlikely, if we're just going to be completely honest. The new NIT rules seem to have eliminated the rule, and I'm saying rule in quote here, that you have to be 500 to make the NIT. That's always been a question as to whether or not it exists, but it's one that's seemingly followed. So all the power conferences basically get their top two teams that don't make the NCAA tournament. The top two teams by ranked by the net will make the NIT automatically. Now, it doesn't mean more teams can't make it, and that's what does give you know, Penn State a chance. But if you look at the kind of the numbers, if you're assuming the Big Ten's NCAA tournament teams, obviously you're going to assume Purdue is going to be there. You're going to assume Illinois is going to be there. You're going to assume Wisconsin's in. You're going to assume Michigan State's in. You're going to assume Nebraska's in. You're going to assume Northwestern's in. All right. From there, currently Ohio State is 53 in the net. They would get the first NIT auto bid. Iowa is 61 in the net. They would get the second NIT out of it. Now, not impossible. Ohio State could still make the NCAA tournament, which is crazy to think about. They did defeat Iowa yesterday, so they could still make a run. If you're a Penn State fan, you would like them to make the NCAA tournament. That gives us a chance at the NIT. So let's say they find a way to make the NCAA tournament. I think they probably need two more wins, but let's see what happens. Iowa is next at the net at 61. If you go down from there, the problem that we're going to run into is Maryland is 81. Penn State is next at 86. So it would be probably unlikely for Penn State to jump five spots in the net without having any more games to play. Maryland kind of got thrashed yesterday by Wisconsin, but both teams without any games, it's going to be hard for us to jump five spots. Now, things can happen, right? They do look at could some wins that were quad three move to quad two or something like that. Behind us is Minnesota at 91. So both Ohio State and Iowa aren't going to make the NCAA tournament. It's likely right now neither one of them are going to make it, and then both Maryland and Penn State would be out. Penn State and Maryland have identical 16 and 17 records. If you look at their kind of metrics across the board, honestly, pretty darn similar. Maryland is 2-9 versus quad one. We are 2-8. Maryland is 4-4 versus quad two. We're 4-6. If you combine quad three and quad four, this is where Penn State has a little bit of an advantage. Maryland has 10 wins, but four losses. We have 10 wins and three losses. At the end of the day, you know, Maryland's metrics are just a tiny bit better than ours. Is it possible that Maryland could get the auto bid if Ohio State makes it and Penn State and at large? Possible. Do you think they're going to take the first at large and it be under 500? Probably not. So unfortunately, unless Maryland can really fall in the net and Ohio State can make a run, the NIT is going to be pretty unlikely. A lot of the NIT bracketologists that I follow have really echoed similar sentiments. There are other postseason tournaments, as Penn State basketball fans know. There is the CBI, which has moved to mostly a mid-major type tournament. Penn State did play in the CBI, famously losing to Siena. I believe it was 2013. My goodness, it was quite some time ago. 2014, excuse me. This was when we were supposed to host this game. We were the favored team, but due to hosting the women's NCAA tournament, we had to go to Siena and unfortunately lost that game 54-52. There have been a few teams since then, major conference teams that have played in the CBI, but it's mostly been, like I said, the mid-majors or low majors. So pretty unlikely, I would say, that Penn State would take a CBI bid, especially in a world where, you know, we've even seen a few teams opt out of the NIT. I don't think there's any CBI in Penn State's future. There is the CIT tournament that's strictly for low and mid-majors. So what I'm trying to say is, unfortunately, Penn State's probably not going to be playing in the postseason. I think their games are done. Doesn't mean I won't watch the NIT selection show. Always have. Doesn't mean I won't fill out NIT bracket. Always have. But unfortunately, just the way the NIT selection criteria has changed, it doesn't seem to work in Penn State's favor. Of course, had this been the criteria 3 years ago under Jim Ferry, we absolutely would have made the NIT. We had like the highest net ever not make the NIT. But sometimes that's just the way the cookie crumbles as a Penn State basketball fan. Listen, it's a tough loss. That's basketball, right? I think what we can all do is hang I don't want to hang our heads in shame because this team fought all year long. They surpassed all their expectations. Again, we'll kind of get into a season-long recap, but even going out, playing the second day in a back-to-back, I mean, the game finished, you know, close to 11:30 p.m. I'm proud of them. They played hard, and that's all you can ask for. One of my good friends sent a message saying, this is a team that had many opportunities to quit this year, and they really didn't. Overcoming the dismissal of their leading scorer. This team continued to fight all year long, and I think that that's something that we should be proud of as we look to the offseason. There's going to be a lot of movement this offseason. This roster could look quite a bit different next year. We'll kind of discuss who we think might stay, who we think might go, and kind of take it from there. But for now, the Nittany Lions will finish the 2023-2024 year at 16-17, 9-11 in the conference, and finish knocked out in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. For those interested in the KenPom rankings, Penn State opened the year at number 85 as of right now, and there could still be some movement as more teams play. They finished 77th. So by all intents and purposes, it's a good year. They finished higher than they were expected. We'll be back to recap the whole thing. Steve will join us and join back to his hosting duties, so I can merely fall back to the co-host. But for now, we appreciate your time listening to us. Thank you from all of us here at Shots Gotta Fall podcast, the premier, the best, the only Penn State basketball podcast. My name's Evan Smith. We'll talk to you soon.